Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit and chat with Dave Kunin of The Killers. It's a wonderful chat and it's coming your way very, very soon. Just before we get on with that lovely natter, a few thank yous. So a thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Huge thanks to Ben at the Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast, who facilitated this interview and introduced me. So the Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast is a really, really, if you like this podcast, you'll love that as well. It's long form interviews with great bands and musicians. So go check them out. Also like to thank 76 for producing this podcast. And who's doing a stellar job at the moment, because, you know, we're still in lockdown and we're still a bit funny about going back to studios. And obviously, you know, today's guest is in San Diego, not in an overcast Essex. So, you know, the thoughts of facilitating this in a studio were slim to none. So he's got lots of kind of Zoom audio to play with, 76, and he's doing a great job, you know, ensuring that you get a nice warm podcast to listen to. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then once you've finished this episode with Dave, then go and have a look in the archives, because you can hear me talking to all kinds of actors, musicians, DJs, producers, artists as diverse as, where do we start? Butch Vig, the producer. Also speak to DJs such as Fatboy Slim, Fed LeGrand, and then we speak to bands such as, where do we start? Foo Fighters, Motley Crue. Go and have a look. I'm not going to sit here and list them because there's about 300, so go and have a look. And if you like your comedy, then you can hear me chatting to Ed Gamble, James Acaster. There's loads of great comedians on the podcast as well. Just a really big bundle of wonderfully talented, friendly chats with, yeah, splendid creative people. I think we're ready for the chat. There's a Patreon if you'd like to support the podcast there. You can find out about everything to do with this podcast at your one-stop shop, which is www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Anyway, that's not why you're here. This is why you're here. So please enjoy today's episode of Off the Beaten Track Podcast with Dave Kunin. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the Cacao Bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is, just for you Off the Beaten Track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in Off the Beaten Track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we are recording. How you doing, Dave?
I'm good. I can't complain. The weather's pretty good in San Diego all the time, so.
Lovely. All right. Well, in regards to before we start anything, actually, and we start talking records, just, I mean, recording this at the beginning of May, I just want to ask you how you found the last 14 months as both Dave human being and Dave creative.
Okay. Well, yeah, on one hand, the pandemic itself, I actually didn't mind at all. Like, as far as being like having to stay home and things being canceled, I thrive in that role of, oh no, I can't leave my house. So my only choice is to work on music or watch TV or play video games. Too bad. So I excelled in that. That was not a problem. And I used that time to work on music pretty much the whole time and finish this record. On the outside world, which I watched mostly through the TV, that was much more discouraging and, you know, on multiple levels. So that was tough to watch, but I think it was for a lot of people. I myself was okay, but I felt bad and discouraged for a lot of the stuff I saw.
Well, let's stay positive and let's talk records. And Dave, I'm going to ask you. The cat's arrived.
Amazing. The cat's arrived. I have more privacy in my office. Okay.
For track one, Dave, I'm going to ask you the song that you think has the greatest ever intro, please.
This was a tough one to pick, and after thinking about it, do you want to go with my honorable mentions first?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I could be swayed any of these. You can't sit on the laptop. All right. Stairway to Heaven was what I first thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a famous intro.
Yep.
Like, that everybody knows, and you know a lot of good stuff's coming. Thunderstruck, it's got a heck of a good intro. As a guitar player, I just love that thing. Also, Sweet Child of Mine is an obvious choice, a great guitar intro. But I picked Johnny B. Goode.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, just, you know, that's just a classic guitar lick, and it's kind of his signature thing. He starts several songs with a similar lick, but, you know, Johnny B. Goode is his signature thing for that kind of thing.
Well, I'm aware that I'm sitting opposite someone that's wrote one of the most iconic intros, guitar intros of all time, which is an absolute pleasure to be having this conversation. But as you're approaching writing or finishing the new record, what I want to ask you is way back when you was writing the first Killers record and stuff like that, the way that people listened to music then was far different to how people listen to music now. And by that, I mean, we're looking at, I watch how my children consume their media now, and it's very fast moving thumbs and attention spans mm-hmm. seem to be getting shorter and shorter. And we're seeing kind of big commercial pop records getting literally having like every bit of sort of fat taken off the bone. To give you these kind of like 2 minute sound bites of pop. I just wonder, you know, over the time that you've been in music, do these kind of changes in how people consume their music and things like that, and the sort of formulas and the science behind, you know, how pop music should be made, does that ever find its way through to your songwriting process?
A little bit.
Do you know where I'm going with that question, Dave? Sorry, I was round about the houses a bit.
No, I 110% know what you're talking about, and I'm ashamed to say that it has affected my thought at all, but I don't know how it can affect any artist right now. Just that at least crosses your mind. The like, okay, I've made this song. I like the way it is. Not going to let anyone affect my art or whatever. But then when you hit play, you have to start thinking about how long before people skip. So that doesn't mean that like every song that I, certainly most of my songs weren't affected, but yeah, I'm aware of that. I think overall music, I think it's going to take a while, but it is going to have a very negative impact that eventually catches up to the evolution of music, because I remember being at a club a while ago. It's similar, but the guy was doing this style of DJ where he was playing like a minute and a half of songs. And then he'd play one song and then like mix it up with the dance. And then he would just come in with like a chorus of like one song from the 80s and then quit. And I'm like, no, man, you don't. I mean, people in the club might know that chorus or they might sing along to it, but you're missing the whole point.
Yeah.
Of everything before that was set up to reward you with the chorus and the verse and all the other stuff. And it's not supposed to just be here it is. And then another one. It's going to, if soon everyone's just going to open up with the chorus, which already I've heard some people do. And, and I know why, because of the, they're afraid of skipping, but it's like, go. And then right into the chorus lyric, we got to give you the very best, most hooky thing right away. But then you're going to have a bunch of people just clicking on and going, oh, chorus for a second. Oh, cool. And then next song, chorus. It's like they're just going to start discarding all of it. It's all just going to become not as valuable from one song to the next. Yeah. Just going to like get a few choruses and then, I don't know.
There's value in the journey, isn't there? Like, as you said, like the chorus is the payoff. And the tracks that you mentioned, you know, like Stairway to Heaven and Thunderstruck and I guess the Guns N' Roses track as well, like they take their time to get going. Certainly the first two, like there's no instant, like you've got to wait for it with them records. And then when you get it, it delivers. And I think there's so much value in that journey. And that's the little thing that I worry about.
I worry about it a lot. And I just started kind of rediscovering Led Zeppelin this last year, because I felt like for some reason I never gave them a proper chance. I think because I've heard their hits so much that their hits are some of my least favorite stuff, except for Stairway. Hmm. But some of the like the Black Dog and a Whole Lot of Love, I feel like I've heard that a zillion times, and I just didn't have any desire to listen to their records. And then during the pandemic, I was like, man, I am way overdue for this. So I really dug into Zeppelin, and there's a whole bunch of stuff I love. And I made some like compilation CDs just for myself and all this other stuff. But a lot of their stuff has long intros.
Yeah.
Like In the Light is one of my favorites, and that takes like 5 minutes to get into. Yeah. So thank God that they have nothing to worry about. They're Led Zeppelin, they're a big band, but I don't know how that band would go this time around. You know, there's bands that can do it. They just got to be respected, and people got to give them a chance. You know, Radiohead could probably do this kind of thing. A lot of bands could, but now I guess it's harder for bands that are just starting out, because you're trying to get the attention of so many people who've got so many choices and of music and other things to do. So I don't know. It's rough.
Well, I'm going to take you back for track two. And I'm going to ask you for the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, Dave.
I had to think about this one. And I chose Thriller by Michael Jackson. Because I was really young, and that was probably the first song that, like, I didn't know I was going to be a musician, and maybe I didn't, but it made me love music so much. And, you know, I got the whole record, and that song has like gives me chills at the time, just like it's got a little bit of everything. It's like strangely scary if you're a kid, which I was at the time, like six. But, you know, just the great main line of it, the bass line and everything. It just really had an impact on me. Oh, I gave In the Air Tonight an honorable mention.
I mean, you got to wait a long while for the payoff on that one.
Yeah, I know.
I
think Thriller was the first song that really did it for me.
And what would that emotion have been?
I don't know. It was like excitement, I guess. And like, I just thought it was music. I didn't know music could be so good, you know. And that Thriller album, it was one of the best albums ever. And just made me get into all music at that time.
Yeah. I think that the I mean, when I was at school, when that came out, there was like a VHS copy of like the making of Thriller that was sort of being passed around. And if you managed to get your hands on it for like an evening, it was just the most exciting thing you'd ever seen. It was, yeah. You know, just and seeing Michael Jackson and seeing the dancing. And I mean, his voice is ridiculous. It's so good, yeah. Michael Jackson's voice. And then, yeah, and there was just something about, well, obviously it went on to be one of the biggest selling records of all time, but for me, there was just a huge array of emotions to that. I was a little bit scared of it.
You know? I know.
Do you know what I mean? No.
Well, especially when you watch the video.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, I remember being a little scared.
Okay, right. So for track three, let's stay in those early years. I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
I actually took the time. I have a few I could pick from, but I did one for elementary, middle school, and high school.
Cool.
Because I have certain songs like for elementary, I picked another Michael Jackson one, Beat It and then Eat It by Weird Al, because I got into Weird Al. I got into Weird Al right at the time when I was like a kid too, because that was fun for me to listen to his stuff. And that takes me back. Middle school, Janie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith. I love that song. And it really got Aerosmith like kind of back on the map again. And I was just super into that Pump record.
Such and a great record.
I know. I wrote down a few. Eternal Flame by the Bangles reminds me of eighth grade, not because I listened to it, just because it was played constantly at dances and everything. And high school, I have Teen Spirit and Cherub Rock.
All right, okay. So,
you know,
were they both produced by Butch Vig?
I think they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. I mean, how much... I mean, first of all, before we get onto that record, like, how was school? Did you enjoy your time at school?
Depends which year. Every year, some years were better than others. I didn't always love some of my high school. I just wanted to get the heck out of there, which is weird, sad, because as soon as it's over, I like wished I would have done it all differently.
Sure.
But most of high school, I was just practicing guitar and trying to mind my own business. Because I didn't like being there. I regretted that years later. That, like, you'd never get that opportunity ever again to hang out with certain people. And, you know, most of the people you go to high school with, you'll never see again.
Yeah.
Some you'll see around town and you'll keep in touch with your close friends, and that's it.
You said you was playing guitar a lot and minding your own business. Did you know what you wanted to be when you was at school?
Yeah, I mean, a guitar player, that's all I wanted to do. And if it wasn't that, I was going to, you know, just deliver newspapers or something. I didn't care.
I mean, you tick that box. you achieved your goal. So that's a good start. And I mean, moving on a little bit from Aerosmith to, I'm imagining the more sort of important years of us, you know, of defining, you know, I guess it's them later years where you find your tribe, and I guess those times in the kind of early to mid 90s when what we called in the UK grunge as well, like when that happened, I mean, how important was that for you to be able to kind of, you know, look at people that didn't look like pop stars, that looked like Kurt, that looked like Billy Corgan, you know, how was that, and to hear the kind of passion and the anger in what they were doing, and kind of almost certainly Kurt kind of singing for the weird and the wonderful, you know, tribes.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I was around and it was in high school when it was happening, because it's such a big era, an important turning point in music that, you know, I feel old that a lot of the 20-year-olds, they weren't even alive for that. So they don't have no idea what I'm talking about, but it really changed everything. One, the music was so great, But also it was like, oh yeah, duh. You can sound like this, because music was getting a little stiff towards the end of the 80s in regards to some things with rock. And, you know, he kind of made all the labels go, oh, kind of rethink everything.
Yeah.
And not just signing bands that sounded like grunge, but taking a chance on a lot of other, bands and singer-songwriters, that all of a sudden there was like a whole variety of music that wasn't there before.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I think in regards to Nevermind, that I kind of put somewhere to the side of, you know, as much as I love the Pearl Jam, Soundgarden's, Tads, and, you know, all of the kind of bands that come from that era, and Pumpkins, Nevermind is the perfect pop record as well. Every single song, you know, as a rock DJ, is something I've done for a long, long time. You can play any track from Nevermind, and it's just made for the dance floor. It's every chorus, he's brilliant. Every chorus, there's so many hooks, so many melodies. It's a brilliant pop record, and it's obviously raucous and loud and angry as well. I just think it is a perfect record.
It is. It is. I agree. It's a perfect record. And I was listening to like Aerosmith and other stuff before, because there were some great rock that came before it, but this was like a whole different way of thinking.
Yeah.
And that record was great. And then shortly after that came Siamese Dream and a bunch of other good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, Siamese Dream. What a record that is as well.
Yeah.
Okay. For a track 4, the first record you remember buying from a record store, please.
Down. I've already mentioned Michael Jackson, but I think the first one was Billy Joel and Innocent Man.
Okay.
And Thriller had to have been second, if not the same day. But those are the first two cassettes that I bought.
In regards to Michael Jackson, and I've done probably 300 episodes of this podcast now, and it's impossible for, you know, for people not to mention Michael Jackson, because obviously Michael Jackson is huge. And one of the questions when people mention that I like to ask is, in regards to Michael Jackson's music now, and we should obviously clear up the fact that, you know, he's never been found guilty of anything, but can you listen to Michael Jackson records now? Can you separate the kind of rumors and the myths from the music?
I guess I have to. I don't want to talk too much about that, because, like, I don't know what happened, and if...
Sure.
I'm supposed... I certainly don't condone any of this stuff or mean to be insensitive to those who might be ticked, but... Well, one, he's dead.
Yeah.
So the music is just notes and chords and a dead guy's vocal and, you know, Eddie Van Halen's solo on Beat It.
Sure.
You know, these are undeniably great things.
Yeah.
I can understand why, if some people don't want to listen to it. I don't listen to it every day, but if it's, but these are my memories of before they were tainted, and the music was good then, and unfortunately it's still good now. I don't really know how else to say it.
I think you said it perfectly. I completely agree with you on that. That's exactly my stance on it as well. And in regards to sort of record stores, as you got into playing guitar and forming bands and such, did record stores become kind of important places for you?
Very, very important. I've been thinking about this a lot, because I saw High Fidelity on HBO just a couple of days ago.
I watched that last week again.
Yeah, I know. And my favorite stuff actually is not the love story part of it. I just like the record store part.
Oh, incredible.
Because, you know, that's fun. And I remember going, I actually lived in Chicago, and I used to always go to this record store like two or three times a week that was very similar, if not even based on that record store. And I loved the vibe. I loved that there was like a guy at the counter that was like maybe a little snooty, and I loved it, but because it was like a little intimidating, but sometimes I would try and listen to what he was saying or see what his picks were or whatever. I was always embarrassed to sell certain CDs, but then I'm also like, well, that's why I'm selling them. See, because I don't want them anymore. But he would be like, oh, that's disgraceful. You owned this willingly, you know, like there was so much of that. And, but I really desperately miss it. And there was always posters everywhere and so much music you would discover just by walking around.
Yeah.
That it's a little, now you discover music in different ways by like clicking on one link to another or however you do it. But I just miss going into record stores and that whole experience. And when I was growing up, I would mow lawns and then I would have like $50 at the end of the week, which is enough for like three CDs. And it would be a fun day. I would like spend like 2 hours like walking around and deciding which they were going to be. And then those were the three I would have for the week. And,
yeah.
You know, I would listen to each record a lot, you know, so I knew every song on that album because I didn't, you know, there was no internet, no Spotify, no skipping around. And maybe I didn't know that other people even then weren't like me, but I would always listen to the album in its entirety several times.
Would you look at the sleeve notes while you was listening to it?
Yes.
That's something, you know, I don't want us to sound like kind of granddads here talking about how it was back in the day, but there is something lovely about album artwork and being able to kind of read the sleeve notes and stuff like that. I think that's something that is lost now. And I think that's the sad part of it.
No, I know. Well, I was going through that with my own, making my own album right now, because I was like, well, how much detail should I put into this? The cover is the most important part because that'll be online when you find it. The rest will just be for the few people who buy the physical. And I chose not to have a booklet because, well, one, that's just extra money. And I don't think most people who even buy the physical would necessarily appreciate the booklet. So there's artwork. There's extra, you know, fold out. So there's artwork and there's stuff to see, but there's no booklet because, frankly, for most people, that's probably a waste of money at this point.
Listen up. I've only got another new sponsor, Eggfried. It's this super cool clothing label. And if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humor in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, EGGSALAD, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Eggfried. Also, they've got a new kids range, and it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. I'm going to sort of move things forward now, and for track five, I'm going to ask you for the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Oh, I had trouble with this one. I wrote down some stuff, though. I never went clubbing that often, but in college I would go to bars, and so Nine Inch Nails Closer was probably the song I remember most from that era.
Yeah.
You know, cool song at the time. It was like, seemed very ahead of its time. Before there was like any EDM or anything like that. So that was a fun song when it came on. I wrote down others that don't really fit, but I remember I always Start Spreading the News by Sinatra was what they would always play when they wanted you to go home.
Yeah. That's a big thing in the UK too, man.
I know. And I always think of that song. It just takes me, whenever I hear it, it just takes me back of like them turning on the lights and saying like, go home, you know, yeah. I don't know. So that...
Just to sort of touch on, Nine Inch Nails. So was this kind of a time like clubbing? Was that like kind of like rock bars and kind of like rock clubs and things like that that you was going to?
Yeah, well, you have more of those in the England than we do here, but it was like college bars that had like dance floors and areas to just hang out and drink and whatnot, and always a DJ playing random stuff, some dance stuff, and then he'd throw in like a Van Morrison song in there just for the heck of it or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. I tell you, have you watched the Song Exploder documentary about Nine Inch Nails doing Hurt?
No, I've not seen that.
That's a good watch. That's a really good watch. They just break the whole thing down of how it was put together. And yeah, it's a weird one, Trent Reznor. I get why people think he's like incredible, but some of the stuff that Nine Inch Nails has put out, I've kind of struggled with. The first, like Pretty Hate Machine, I thought had some great records on it, and then obviously Close is a huge record. But you know, he's gone off on all different sorts of tangents. But watching that and watching him, how that was put together, he's a real clever guy, man. Like real clever. It's a good watch, that.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I have a lot of respect for him and that what he did back in the 90s. Like I said, he was ahead of his time.
And sort of just on the records that you've spoke about to this point, and I know I just sort of spoke that I mentioned that, you know, I think that Nevermind was a huge pop record. Where did you think, like, you drew, like, for if we look at the first Killers record as an example, it's perfect pop. There's so many, you know, super infectious melodies and choruses, and like, where do you think them kind of pop sensibilities kind of found their way into your ears and your creativity?
I think kind of naturally. I mean, me and Brandon and the other guys, we all appreciate the 80s, a lot of 80s influences, whether it be New Order, Depeche Mode, or all the one hit wonders of back then. And yeah, there was no shortage of just big choruses in the 80s. And I would argue it's still probably the best era of music, not just for style, but because, yeah, great songs and great choruses. And I think people now are, or at least a lot of people are maybe afraid almost to go for that. Like, oh, we shouldn't do these big choruses. And it's obviously some people like pop, you know, embrace that. But, I remember when we started, there was a lot of local bands that were almost ashamed that they're like to try that. And it's like, well, I don't know. We're just having fun and we're trying to make the song as good as it can be. And we're not the least bit ashamed. That never even entered our brain.
Yeah. Track 6, I'm going to take you home. A favorite song from an artist from your home or county or state, whatever you choose to go for, Dave.
I did some research on this because I'm from Iowa.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure who was from Iowa. So I have a few things to talk about. The short answer is the Everly Brothers. They're from Iowa and they're kind of the biggest band. So I chose Love Hurts.
Wow. What a record.
Yeah. There was others I could have picked that like were born there and moved away, like Andy Williams. And Slipknot is probably the biggest thing to ever come out of Iowa.
Of course. Yeah.
So I have to at least mention them. They're bigger than the Everly Brothers at this point. I just not as familiar with their music. Love Hurts is a song I've always liked. And I like the Nazareth cover version of it and everything. And so those guys, I have like, other guys I know from Iowa too that have good stuff, but I could mention. But the Everly Brothers one would be my pick.
Well, I mean, just back to those early years in playing, you know, going to bars and playing in bands and such. Like, what was the sort of scene like back then?
Well, yeah, when I was in high school, this is right around that 90s time where, sorry, Nirvana just come out. But Iowa was like always been a little slower with trends. So there was like still metal bands in the 90s and kind of a mix of new and 80s and grunge at the same time was happening. And then there were like indie, there were bands like House of Large Sizes that kind of fit in with the whole Replacements vibe and Pixie vibe and that kind of stuff. They were like big in Eastern Iowa. I remember, I went to bars all the time to watch music. Usually I would get in for free. I remember in Des Moines, there was a bar I would just walk into usually, and they wouldn't even card me. I can't remember if you had to be 21 or not, but somehow I always got in there. They never cared. I was just there to watch music and go home. I never drank one drink or anything. Well, I had to drive and I was, I was like kind of be there illegally. So I didn't want to take any of those risks, yeah. But I was just there to watch music. And so I saw a lot of cool bands, and I probably could have seen Slipknot. I think one time I walk up to the door and Slipknot was playing and they're very, very early years. And I just was scared to death. I was like, what is that? Who's on stage? And I didn't know who they were yet. And they had a following pretty quickly. And they were, they were the rougher metal guys. And so I shied away, but.
And you mentioned obviously that you had to kind of, sort of go and look to find some artists from there. The fact that there wasn't lots, and did it feel like if you wanted to be in a band from where you was from, was it achievable that you could make it, for want of a better description?
Well, achievable to very few, but never stopped me from trying. Yeah. I was in bands in high school with guys from 15 minutes over in the next town. And then in college, I tried several times to get bands going. And some of them, we played shows and then eventually I moved when I was like 23, I moved to Las Vegas. Because I felt like I had exhausted everything around there. And I wanted to move to the West Coast, whether it was LA or Vegas or whatever. Obviously, Vegas was an odd choice, but it worked out.
Yeah, it worked out okay, Dave. You get to play DJ for this last track. And I'm going to ask you, please, for a song that many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yes, I don't think most people would know this one, but it's a guy, Emmett Rhodes, E-M-I-T-T-R-H-O-D-E-S. He put out a bunch of music in the early 70s. It was like an engineer who made, I don't know, you can go on, find him on Spotify, made like 30, 40 songs that they came out not long ago on Spotify, and they're great stuff. They're great stuff back then. And then he put out like an additional album, I don't know, within the last 10 years, say. And there's a song called Rainbow Ends I chose to be the song that most people wouldn't know. I think it's a great song. And it's his earlier stuff sounds like Beatles-esque, just because it kind of fit in with that time. And he was obviously must have liked them. But he's got his own, voice and style, and it's quality stuff. And just kind of this story of this engineer who made this record that not many people know about.
Well, what we do is we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast, Dave, so people can go and check that out and also check out mm-hmm. all the other songs that you've spoken about today. As we see ourselves kind of in the middle of a year now, and with a lot more positivity than where we was last year, and hopefully we're going to find ourselves, you know, over the coming months, being able to reconnect and go to shows and hug our friends and stuff. What are you looking forward to most from 2021, and what's happening professionally?
Well, it'll be fun to see a lot of bands, and hopefully I'll play some shows too, you know, for my own thing or the Killers or whatever. I would love to get out there and play, but there are so many tours canceled that there's going to be a flood of bands to see on a small club level and a big arena level. So that'll be fun to see a lot of that. And I'm vaccinated, so I'm comfortable. So,
and new solo record?
Yeah, it comes out June 25th. And I'm really happy. I got three or four songs already released. You can find on Apple and Spotify and Bandcamp and SoundCloud. And I'll probably play some shows too. I haven't really thought about that yet, because I gotta get practiced with my band members and see what they're up for. But I'm sure at some point I'll play. And I'm just really happy to get it out.
Yeah, cool. And as soon as you can, coming back to the UK.
Yeah, I want to. I'd love to come back. Not sure when. Maybe next year. I don't know. But I always have a good time there. Best crowds probably in the UK.
Wonderful. Dave, thanks so much for your time today, mate. It's been lovely talking records with you.
Sure. Thanks for it. Was fun for me too.
There you go. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Go check out the new records. As you said, some tracks are up on Spotify now. New album. I'm just trying to think. I'm recording this straight after I've recorded it, so I'll try and tie this release out when the record comes out as well. So it should be out now to go and listen to, if I get my dates right. I think I should. What a lovely gent. When Ben told me that he could reach out to Dave, he also told me that Dave was a really, really lovely guy. So he wasn't lying. And so thanks again, mate, for doing that. He was a delight to chat to. Well, you know, everything else aside, I tried not to kind of fanboy out, but, you know, how can you not mention some of the most iconic intros of all time and not consider that guitar line at Mr. Brightside, you know, and them incredible pop songs on, you know, the Killers have put out. And yeah, but I didn't want to kind of go in heavy there and ask him questions that I'm sure he's been asked a million times. So I tried to keep on the format of the podcast and, you know, find out more about the creative journey and the influences and such. And yeah. And if you got a fraction of the joy listening as I did having that conversation, then we should all be very happy right now. Thanks ever so much for listening and supporting this podcast. As mentioned at the beginning, please go and check out the back catalogue, because there's 300 episodes to get stuck into. And once more, thanks, Ben, ever so much for putting that together for me from the Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast. I'm back next time. Be excellent to each other. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.